Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast.
I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel.
Where you can master the art of enriching your life.
What kind of kindergarten shit is this?
And finding a path to financial freedom.
Who the fuck was supposed to teach me how to do my taxes?
So sit back, relax, and step into the Rich Room. You know I can't help these, cause they know they can never touch these. So baby, let me talk my shit, or I might just throw another fit.
What's up, sluts? Welcome to the Rich Room Podcast. I'm your host, Lindsay Sobel. I'm here solo, and I got a lot of shit to cover. I was extremely blessed to have guests for the past two episodes, one with my fabulous daughter, Madison, and the other was with the two-thirds of my throuple, Tressie and Austin Summerall. You know, I learned a few things podcasting with guests. First, podcasting with guests is so much easier than podcasting alone. However, podcasting alone allows me to talk about all the shit I want to talk about, and I really do like that. One thing I did notice is that the sound didn't feel up to my standard, and we were only using one mic in both of the episodes, so I think I'm going to have to get multiple mics, but that's a good thing because that only means that I am growing and expanding and getting my shit together. Oh my gosh, I finally got my Jeep fixed. What a fucking relief. I realized that I really, really love my car after not driving it due to a safety recall. But a bitch got the recall repaired, got my oil changed and tires rotated. I'm basically crushing it. You know, I had a fantastic Mother's Day this year. Me and Madison, we just had a fabulous, relaxing day. She wrote me a lovely poem, got me flowers, and we went to the beach. Actually, we went to South Beach. I'll tell you what, though. Next year, I'm going to tell her to check the Cartier website. Did y'all see the article where a man purchased $14,000 Cartier earrings for $14 after there was a pricing error on the website? The article said that the man broke out in a cold sweat after seeing the offer on Cartier's website. Bet he did. Damn, and you know Cartier had to honor that purchase. Someone got fired that day. Yeah. Even though I did not get Cartier earrings, I actually had such a nice Mother's Day. We packed up our beach gear, went to Publix and got some snacks, got a little cooler from my lemon LaCroix and Madison's little mini Cokes. Mini Cokes are just honestly the best beverage out there. 10 out of fucking 10 for mini Cokes. We made the drive to South Beach and stayed at the beach all day. We were a little wiser this time and purchased a sunblock beach umbrella. We named her Morticia, mainly because the inside of the umbrella was lined with all black. And as you know, black is my favorite color. She only blew away once, but we set her right back up and secured her with a sandbag, and that did the trick. We also purchased a wagon to lug all of our beach stuff. But I'm sure anyone out there listening who has attempted to bring a wagon to the beach is screaming, "Don't do it, Lindsay," because that bitch was hard as fuck to move on the beach, despite a major selling point of the wagon is you can roll it on sand. Yeah, no, that was not the case. So me and Madison are pushing this wagon through the sand, losing our breath. We are working so damn hard. We even forfeited a better beach spot because it was 20 feet further away from where we stopped pushing the wagon, and we literally could not go on any further. I was like, fuck it. This is a good enough spot. And you know, I think there was a direct correlation with the people on the beach on whoever had a wagon stayed at the beach the longest. And I believe because it's so fucking hard to bring a wagon out there and bring it back in. After we got to the beach, we were both like, you know, maybe we should just carry our little cooler and our little umbrella next time. It would be a lot easier than pushing this bitch through the sand. It was such hard work pushing that wagon back in from the beach after being outside all day. I exerted myself so much that I had to sit down, and I was basically out of breath, and I thought that I was gonna throw up. I hate talking shit about my wagon because I actually adore that wagon. My love for wagons started, I want to say, in 2016. That was when I made my first wagon purchase. Around that time was when Madison moved from Gulfport to New Orleans and was actually living with me. Gigi lived downstairs. We had a cute little double. But when I had Madison move in with me full time, I had to really be both mom and dad. And the wagon gives a heavy dad energy. The wagon is a single gal's best friend. Something's too heavy? Use your wagon. Something's too bulky? Use your wagon. Does your child no longer want to walk? Use the wagon. The wagon is there to unburden you. I had a really great wagon that I left in Gulfport when I moved to Miami. I just didn't have the room to bring it with me when I moved to Miami in October. But this past weekend was when Madison had to be out of her dorm. And it was just the two of us packing up her dorm and moving her out. So I knew that I would need a wagon. I perused Amazon for the perfect wagon. See, I'd already bought a wagon at Home Depot, but it wasn't heavy duty. It couldn't even fit a moving box, and the wheels were piss poor to say the least. So I will be returning that wagon. And in its place, I purchased the Udior large collapsible extended beach wagon cart that has a weight capacity of 440 pounds. And even though she struggled on the beach, I still love her. She helped me and Madison swiftly and efficiently move the boxes from her dorm to the car and then move all the trash to the dumpster. She also comes with a cute little cover. I haven't named her yet. If you have a good idea on what I could name my wagon, email me at therichroompodcast@gmail.com. I will be reviewing all suggestions. You know, this is the first year that I realize that Mother's Day has some pretty poor placement in our calendar year. Mother's Day is always the second Sunday in May. That seems harmless enough, right? Well, I thought so too, until I realized that Mother's Day seems to always fall on a graduation, on a soccer game, end of the year program, dance recital, or any child activity, such as moving out of a college dorm. The second weekend in May is no time for moms to relax. This is the home stretch. We are still in the game. We can't take the time to rest. We have children to take care of. No shade to the dads, but from what I see, it's the moms that are the project managing all of this shit. Keeping the calendar straight with all the kids' sports activities and end-of-the-year school programs. It's the moms that are making sure the teacher has an end-of-the-year gift. It's the moms that bring snacks for the kids' sports. It's the moms that make sure the costumes are right for the dance performances. Father's Day, which is the third Sunday of June, steers way clear of any end-of-the-year school activities or sports or recitals. In fact, the kids might even be at some sort of sleepaway camp by the time Father's Day rolls around. I'm not saying we should move Father's Day, but I think we should move Mother's Day to a time where moms don't have a million other things on their minds. So I would like to make a motion to move Mother's Day to a different time of the year. Does anyone want to join my motion? Please email me at therichroompodcast@gmail.com to share your suggestions on a new day for Mother's Day. So I have some very exciting news to share. I am finally bringing my dog Sadie to live with me in Miami. Sadie is the sweetest dog you'll ever meet. I got her when I was in law school. See, I graduated from college in 3.5 years. Every summer, I either went to school or worked. After I was done with college, I was fucking tired of going to school. I went and worked for my dad a little bit, and then I was like, I think I want to go to law school. So I was home from college for like 2 years before I went to law school in New Orleans. And that was 2 years of being with Madison every day. And I loved every minute of it. I remember thinking to myself, I could be a stay-at-home mom. I could take care of Madison every day and feel fulfilled. I felt genuinely happy about taking care of Madison and hanging out with her every single day. So I was a little worried that I was going to miss her so much when I went to law school. I was fortunate though, because New Orleans and Gulfport are very close. So I was able to come home much more, and Madison and Gigi came to New Orleans a lot as well. But I was kind of nervous to live alone in New Orleans and decided that it was time for me to get a dog. Me and Madison went to the Humane Society in Gulfport, Mississippi, and saw an adorable litter of puppies and picked out this chocolate brown boy puppy and was literally filling out the paperwork to adopt him when I had a sudden gut feeling that I really wanted the girl puppy. And right then, I put the boy puppy down and got the girl puppy and named that beautiful baby Sadie. The sweetest lady in the land. Sadie went everywhere with me. She would travel with me anywhere I went. She used to sleep on my head when she was a puppy. And she also lived all over New Orleans with me. Well, last year when I split with my ex and moved back to Mississippi to temporarily live with my dad, Sadie seemed to detach from me, which was probably a good thing because I was really struggling at that time to get myself moved to Miami. So there was another dog at my dad's house, and Sadie and this other dog, his name is Jake, had free reign of this big backyard. And Sadie had never had that before. And Sadie used to sleep with me every night, but when I started staying at my dad's house, she stopped sleeping with me, and she would stay with the other dog and, like, kind of abandoned me. I mean, she didn't really abandon me, but, you know, I wasn't mad. I actually was so happy because she was happy. I also felt that it was selfish of me to bring Sadie to Miami when she was so happy at my dad's house. Well, my dad's dog, who Sadie bonded with, passed away about a month or two ago. And then another dog who was staying at his house actually attacked Sadie a few weeks ago, and she had to get like a shit ton of staples. So when I was recently in Gulfport, I made the decision to bring Sadie to Miami with me. She's an older dog and really needs a lot of love and care and attention. I'm very excited. She is an excellent cuddler. The only roadblock that I have run into is transportation. See, I thought that I would be able to fly with Sadie on the plane, like not where she flies in the cargo. I thought I could buy a seat next to me and we could snuggle for the whole 2-hour flight from New Orleans to Miami. But that does not seem to be the case. See, Sadie is a mid-sized dog, and the only way a dog can fly in the cabin of the plane is if the dog is a service animal. Now, Sadie is an emotional support animal, but that does not fly with the airlines. Pun intended. You have to be a straight up service animal, and I don't have the time to get that kind of certification for Sadie. And I could lie and say that she is a service animal, but I think we've established this. I am a rule follower for the most part. So you either have to be a service animal or you have to be a small dog that fits in a carrier under the seat. That won't work for us. I considered having her travel in the cargo area after reading on Reddit that a lot of people had success with it, but I'm really unsure. If anyone out there has flown their dog in the cargo area of a plane, I would love to get your feedback. Please email me at therichroompodcast@gmail.com. So I know that a lot of people have used the cargo area for their pets' transportation, but I know that there have also been some deaths and injuries. Not many, but there have been some. See, Sadie is scared of a lot of things. Thunderstorms, loud noises, the cat, and she's also 11 years old. I just don't feel like I want to risk it. So, I think I have made the decision to fly to New Orleans myself, rent a car, and then drive to Miami with Sadie. Gigi has offered to ride with me, spend some time in Miami, and then fly back. I think that could be fun. So it's a 12-hour drive, and I did it before when I moved to Miami. Actually, I went there and back to Gulfport, and I can do it again. Also, I have already decided that I will listen to the full original Broadway albums for Les Mis, The Wicked, Rent, Hamilton, and Spring Awakening. Those are my go-to shows, my core shows. I know every word to every song, and I pretend like I can sing the fuck out of them. So I figured I could do two performances of each show, and I will basically be in Miami. The last time I made that drive, I was so excited because I had waited to listen to the Jeff Lewis Live after show with Julie and Brandy. The show was on every day, and I hadn't listened to it for like over a week, and I had a 12-hour drive ahead of me. I wasn't even mad that I had to drive 12 hours because I had Brandy and Julie hosting the after show of my favorite show, Jeff Lewis Live. So I had Jeff Lewis Live to listen to, which is an hour, and then I had Brandy and Julie to listen to, which was an hour. So I had stacked up these episodes ready to fill my 12-hour drive with some fucking laughter. Up until August, this was my comfort show for years. I listened every single day. Once I embarked on my 12-hour journey, I started playing the after show episodes that I had queued up. I was practicing delayed gratification. You can imagine my surprise when I realized that there weren't that many episodes of the after show to play. There was Jeff Lewis Live that kept going, but the after show did not coincide with Jeff Lewis Live, which was unusual because the after show is every single day that Jeff Lewis Live is on. I was confused. I was scared. I was worried. So then I went ahead and listened to Jeff Lewis Live while on my 12-hour drive and found out that there had been a major disagreement between Jeff and Brandy and Julie, resulting in Brandy and Julie being fired. I felt like I got broken up with on my 12-hour drive. Honestly, I was fucking devastated, but what could I do? And that's when I stopped listening to Jeff Lewis Live. It got so nasty and low that I just could not listen anymore. Damn. Well, this is why I'll play this 12-hour drive safe and listen to Broadway musicals the entire way. They never let me down. Okay, so the Vanderpump Rules reunion was on this week. We learned that this reunion will be a three-parter. We also learned that Ariana did not watch the whole season, so she has no idea that all her good friends were talking major shit about her. Apparently, the whole cast did not see the ending we saw, and Andy wants everyone to watch it together and get their real-time reactions. Ariana will be in for a rude awakening when she sees Lala and Sheena pop off with jealousy in their eyes on the finale. Man, I have always loved Lala on Vanderpump Rules, but this year she flipped and acted in total contrast than what she has in the past. Dare I say she's hypocritical? Ugh. Okay, a few things pissed me off while watching the reunion. He Who Shall Not Be Named calling Rachel a coward was absolutely fucking ridiculous. It's a good thing this show got canceled because this dude is definitely sinking the ship. I cannot believe Bravo let him back on the show after he allegedly illegally recorded Rachel in a sexually intimate setting without her knowledge or consent. He said that he is questioning whether Rachel has a fucking soul because she included Ariana in the lawsuit regarding said recording. This man is the absolute worst. He is the lowest of the lows, and I'm just happy he is no longer going to be on my TV screen after this is over. Like, I'm with James. I'm so exhausted talking about this affair. I did not think Andy was going to ask about this, but he went there and asked about the atrocious comment the douchebag made where he compared his affair with major cultural events and movements surrounding George Floyd and O.J. Simpson. This fucking guy totally backtracked and said that he was saying how dumb it was that the affair got just as much attention as these real newsworthy events. That ain't what you said in the article. And according to this douche kebab, no one read the article and the headline was clickbait. Well, guess what? Your girl read the article. I read it fucking twice. And that ain't what you said. The article was written by Arena Alexander, who interviewed he who shall not be named. The interview took place at the LA home he shared with Ariana. Also present was the douche's publicist. And this guy said, verbatim, "I'm not a pop culture historian, really, but I witnessed the O.J. Simpson thing and George Floyd and all these big things, which is really weird to compare this to that, I think, but do you think in a weird way it's a little bit the same? Sounds like you're drawing a comparison and saying they're the same." So he was supposed to be interviewed more the next day, but canceled. The article specifically says that what this douchebag said had gotten back to Bravo and there were concerns. I bet there were. The reporter even questioned, what did Tom mean by saying that horrible statement? And the reporter didn't see the douche for 2 more weeks. When they finally reunited to wrap up the interview, they were joined by a Bravo publicist and a senior NBC Universal executive. It wasn't clickbait, it was concern. The fact that this guy didn't even show any embarrassment or shame or contrition or something for what he said is absolutely despicable. I honestly think Bravo opened itself up to exposure and liability by keeping Tom on the show after he recorded Rachel without her knowledge or consent. I just think that's insane, and I think that Rachel could actually add Bravo as a defendant. As I said earlier, Lala also really rubs me the wrong way this season. Just because Ariana made lemonade out of some nasty-ass lemons does not mean that she has to be over her breakup in a matter of months. Yes, it's weird that Ariana and her ex lived together, but they were together for 10 years and owned real property together. It's basically a marriage, and if California recognized common law marriage, they would have actually been considered a married couple. When you've intertwined your life for so many years, it takes more than just a few months to work everything out. Also, it's not like Ariana knew this was coming. It's not like she was set up financially to move at that moment. Like, cut her some fucking slack. Lala is just thirsty for attention, I feel. She's crying at every moment. Lisa was even like, why are you so emotional now? Is it because you're pregnant or what? And she's like, I think so. Like, in the finale, she was like, I knew I was going to break the fourth wall. I knew I was going to break the fourth wall. Like, come on, ho. Like, you are way tougher of a bitch than that. I do find it wild, though, that Andy asked Lala about flirting with Schwartz because she was nice to him. Like, damn, women can't even be nice to men without it being perceived as flirting. It's fucking wild. It also seemed very obvious to me that Lisa and Lala talked beforehand, and they were both going to bring up that Katie had an issue with Ariana being away from the business so much. It seems like Lala, and maybe Katie a little bit, and really Sheena too, are jealous of the attention and opportunities that Ariana got following the affair. Y'all need to be happy for your friends. Find your own place in the world. I recall Lala saying something before the season aired. She said, I think the viewers are going to see a totally different side to Ariana this season, implying that the viewers wouldn't like her. But on the fucking contrary, bitch, we saw a different side to you. We have seen you tell people that you're going to cut them off because they played pickleball with your ex. It seems like this year, everyone is mainly concerned about business opportunities and brand deals and whatnot, and they want to preserve whatever fuckery is left of this show so they can keep that going. Lala flipped. I no longer find her credible. She feels inauthentic, disingenuous, hypocritical, inconsistent. And as my BFF Ryan Hall would say, consistency is my love language. Listen, Katie seems kind of snobby this year, like she can't be fucking bothered, but she made a good point regarding he who shall not be named. We've gone through this whole season, and this dude has yet to take accountability for what happens, and he keeps reducing this whole affair to a singular mistake. He's like, I made a mistake. No, sir. You did not make a mistake. As Katie said, you made a choice every single day, for months, for 7 months to be specific. So, no, it was not one singular mistake, and the lack of accountability is reinforcing the narcissism. Like, stop trying to make this dude happen. It's not gonna happen. It's about damn time Vanderpump Rules got canceled. I mean, when Sheena is celebrating the 10th anniversary of Good as Gold and performing said blast from the past at an event for the finale, I'd say it's time to hang it the fuck up. You know, I do hope Brock finds a purpose, though. He's a really great dad. Oh, I also hear that Lila might be joining the Valley and maybe Sheena. I don't know how I feel about it, but the producers were producing and they just keep on going. This is the first time collectively on all the shows on Bravo that I feel like you can actually see the producers' role. Because it's not just Vanderpump Rules. We are seeing this producer shit all over the place. The producers tried hard to villainize Ariana this season, but look who flipped to hop on the Tom train. Lala. It's actually wild. Ariana and Lindsay from Summer House were both set up to look really bad this season, but actually come out smelling like roses. You can see all these Bravo shows, these longtime relationships, all of a sudden flipping. Take New Jersey, for instance. Jen Fessler has been friends with Margaret and Rachel for a long-ass time, and all of a sudden, she just feels so compelled to be friends with Teresa. And Jackie's friend of the show, Thirsty Ass, is trying to earn a spot back on the show and backs Jen Fessler on the flip-flop friendship. So people don't just change allegiances like that. Not in Jersey. People are like, I can't believe Jen Fessler would do this. It's behind the scenes producing shit. And it seems that everyone's quest to be famous or to make it on a show is more important than their relationships. It's transparent and it's sad. I don't like it one fucking bit. We need new people, just like New York. We need fresh meat. This shit isn't flying anymore. People are getting nasty. People are hitting low. Speaking of conflict, as you all know, there has been a rap quarrel between Drake and Kendrick Lamar. Well, the people have spoken, and Kendrick is the clear winner of this beef. So, after Kendrick dropped the banger, Not Like Us, the fight was basically over. Mainly because Drake didn't respond with a song. And if I'm being completely honest, Kendrick did something that I did not think he was going to do. He out-Draked Drake. Drake is known for putting out bop after bop and really strikes an A minor chord with mainstream music on a consistent basis. When I first started covering this rap beef over a month ago, I said that if I'm evaluating who the best rapper is based on the amount of number one hits that have been put out, then Drake takes it. There was no argument to be made to combat the fact that Drake has more number one hits than Kendrick and J. Cole, who was in this situation at the time. Oh, and I feel J. Cole did the right thing by bowing out of this beef. Kendrick and Drake were going back and forth on their diss tracks, and the hits were starting to get really low. And this art war that these two have been was starting to turn violent. It was reported, art war? That's actually not a bad name for this. Art war. I love that. Okay, it was reported this last week that there was a shooting at Drake's Toronto home and that his security guard was wounded. And I think there were two other incidents that the police had to be called for. Like, it's all fun and games until it gets violent. If there was any doubt that Kendrick won the duel, that was quickly erased when Kendrick's most recent diss track, Not Like Us, debuted at number one on the Billboard Hot 100, which is a spot that is usually occupied by Drake, especially in the summer. Kendrick's other two diss tracks, Euphoria and Like That, hold the number three and number six spot on the Billboard Hot 100, while Drake's diss track, Family Matters, debuted at number seven. Oy. I have to say, I'm impressed with Kendrick. He's an incredibly talented artist, but the charts are not really where Kendrick has shined in the past. It's really nice to see Kendrick getting some widespread respect for his music and artistry. I do not think Drake is going to take this lying down, though. The ego is too big. I imagine Drake is going to lick his wounds and regroup. Here's the thing. I like the competition between the two because it seems to only sharpen their skills and it seems to produce very good music, which is great for the fans. But I do not like seeing two men tear each other down like this. I know that's not really the essence of a rap beef, but these two men are legends in their own right. There is enough space for everyone to exist and thrive in this space. Both men have extensive and loyal fan bases. Boy, are those fan bases loyal as fuck. Dissecting all the lyrics in their entire catalogs of music, it's wild. There are plenty of TikTok videos breaking down the various lyrics. Just Google it. Speaking of TikTok, the owners of TikTok and several content creators have sued the U.S. government regarding the TikTok ban, arguing that the ban is a violation of their First Amendment right. We knew this was coming. Wait. Can I get in on this action? I create some content here and there. Should we class action this bitch? I'll only do it if they let me take a deposition. I cannot tell you how badly I want to take someone's deposition. That was one of my favorite things about litigation. That and going to court. Any time that I got a chance to talk and not write was my time to shine. I absolutely hated legal writing. It's boring. It's uninspired. It lacks a certain joie de vivre. The irony here is that I'm writing more now than I've ever written in my entire life with this podcast. Because I prepare an outline to fill an hour time slot for this podcast every week. And it ain't a short outline. It's so crazy to me because for years I struggled with legal writing, like agonizing over writing a 3-page reply memorandum. But now, with this podcast, I have enough material for a damn book. That's impressive. I have impressed myself. Someone who once impressed me, or should I say a company that once impressed me, was the dating app Bumble. Bumble was revolutionary when it first came out. Its selling point was that it gave women the power back. Bumble built its brand on women having more control on who they interact with because the woman had to make the first move when messaging a potential suitor. This was great because women are obviously only going to message the men that they are interested in. I loved the idea because sometimes you get buyer's remorse when you match with someone and then go back to see their profile and realize that you are not the same person you were when you swiped right on this profile, and now this person doesn't meet your standards, and it's time to unmatch. I haven't used Bumble. Wait, that's a lie. I did use Bumble back in the day, and I only went on 3 dates, and they were all fucking terrible. But now I don't use it at all, and you're about to find out why. I actually use the Locks Club, and I have matched with some individuals and then realized that they are not what I want and have unmatched. Well, Bumble has really stepped in it and also deviated from the entire structure that their brand was built around. So now, both parties in a Bumble match can message the other person. How does that make you different from another dating app? So stupid. The woman now no longer has the control on who she wants to message. Okay, fine. But that really seems to deviate from the whole point of Bumble. To make matters worse, Bumble came out with a marketing campaign this month that basically shames women for not having sex with men. The first ad says, "You know full well a vow of celibacy is not the answer." And it has this like woman in the ad like smiling with sunglasses on. The next one says, "Thou shall not give up on dating and become a nun." And there's another woman in a picture. So these ads are targeted at women, obviously. So Bumble is basically saying that women aren't having sex with men at this time and that women need to stop being celibate and have sex with men. So a couple things. First off, the majority of men out there are not fuckable. They just aren't. Maybe they were fuckable 5 to 10 years ago when none of us were in therapy and our reproductive rights were intact. But shit has changed. I have absolutely zero interest in sleeping with someone when there's even a slight chance that I could get pregnant. Even with birth control, even with condoms, nothing is 100% safe, and these men ain't worth the trouble. There are other things you can do to have a good time with a date that does not involve full-blown intercourse. So, exactly what are these men bringing to the table except some lame dick and a world of untreated childhood trauma? Bottom line, we don't want to fuck you. Secondly, Bumble's ad seems to say that men aren't having enough sex and that it is a woman's problem to fix the lack of sex men are having. Maybe it's time we look at why women aren't interested in having relationships with men. Maybe it's time we tell the men to fix themselves instead of the women having to give in and have sex with them. I don't like this. I don't like this one bit. Bumble seems to be implying that men have an entitlement to having sex with women and women just need to comply. Fuck that. Fuck that so hard. What the fuck are y'all trying to do with us? It's not like we have access to quality reproductive health care. In fact, all over the country, there are laws being enacted to restrict women's access to health care even further. So why the fuck would we want to fuck y'all? Bumble's ad campaign was a move made to try and save the brand, whose shares have dropped by 45% since July 2023. Maybe Bumble should offer some therapy or coaching for these men. Women around the world are collectively realizing we don't need men in our lives. So until these men start bringing something to the table, I think the women are good on their own. Happier, in fact. Thriving. Loving life again. Because we ain't changing. We've been shamed so much that we are used to it now. We've grown numb to it. We are shamed for having sex, and now we are shamed for not having sex. We can't keep up. So we're just going to ignore the shame because it no longer affects us. We no longer care what you think. Not to mention, the technology for vibrators has evolved, so we are all good on our end. Thank you. You know what? I forgot to say earmuffs, Mom. But you know what? Fuck that. She is an independent bitch who don't need a man either. No earmuffs, Mom. So Bumble is definitely not a dating app that I will utilize, but I do dabble in the Locks Club. We didn't need another reason to not use Bumble, but here we fucking go. The co-founder of Bumble recently said that the future of dating is where your AI dates someone else's AI and then finds the best match. Bitch, what? You think we are going to listen to you after you greenlit that sex-shaming ad campaign? We don't trust you, boo. Thank you. Next. Now, I haven't gone on any dates yet from the Locks Club, and I just started chatting with some potential suitors. But there's something that I've noticed. A constant theme, if you will, on all of these profiles, all these men profiles on the dating app. So the dating apps these days really ask the questions that any potential partner would want to know. Do you want kids? Do you drink? Do you smoke weed? Do you do psychedelics? What do you love? What do you hate? I would say that 9 times out of 10, the number one hate on men's profiles, the thing that these men hate more than anything in the world, is slow walkers. What? You know what I hate? A fast walker. Some speedy Gonzalez who fucking books it. Not in this heat, honey. I'm not trying to power walk on a date in heels and a freshly beat face. I find it hilarious that this is a major hate among men. What's wrong with a strut? What's wrong with a stroll? What's wrong with a promenade? Speaking of, Bridgerton, new episode, season 3, just dropped. Where the heck are y'all trying to go? My hates on my profile are people who are cruel to animals, negative energy, low emotional intelligence, not taking accountability, not taking initiative, rude to service workers, not willing to learn, wasting time, meetings that could be emails, and close-minded people. I feel like those are solid hates. And as for slow walking, generally speaking, men are taller than women. I know it's not across the board, but generally speaking, I am 5'4", and while I am not going to discriminate height-wise, I'm generally looking for someone who's taller than me. And if you're taller, you generally have longer legs. So there ain't no way my 5'4 ass is going to hustle my shorter legs to keep up with you. There's just no fucking way. I don't even consider myself a slow walker. I just find the slow walking thing really fucking interesting. Let me say this though. The person who I will be with won't give one single fuck how fast or slow I walk. They will just be happy to be with me. Needless to say, the dating apps aren't doing it for me. However, I have found another app that has piqued my interest. You know what? Side note. See, I just started that sentence with however. Now, I realize this isn't legal writing or anything, but when I worked for this particular partner back in the day, he would not allow anyone who worked for him to start a sentence with the word however. How fucking stupid is that? There are so many weird style things that supervising partners have. Anyways, I just wanted to point that out. So, I have found another app, and it ain't a dating app. I saw an ad for this app on Instagram, and the ad read, "Every Wednesday evening in your city, strangers meet for a dinner. Sign up to join 5 folks, all matched by our algorithm, next Wednesday." I was like, okay, you have my attention. So I went to download the app because I was like, I could fucking go to dinner with 5 strangers. If everyone's a stranger, then everyone is in the same boat. I love that. And you're at a relaxed setting at a dinner table at a restaurant. And there's no pressure or expectation for it to be a romantic encounter. Right when I read this, I was like, this is a great way to meet people. So I signed my ass up and I will be attending dinner with 5 strangers next week. I'm so excited. So this isn't offered everywhere and it mostly takes place in Europe. You can have dinner with strangers in the US, France, England, Germany, Spain, Brazil, Mexico, Portugal, Argentina, the Netherlands, Switzerland, Belgium. They call it a Belgium dip. Scotland, Ireland, Austria, Luxembourg, and Uruguay. Wow. In the US specifically, you can have dinner in New York City, Boston, DC, Philadelphia, and Miami. And pretty soon, some other US cities will join the stranger dinner, including Atlanta, LA, San Francisco, and Chicago. I'm fucking pumped. I think this is a great idea and an organic way to meet people, and ironically, it's through an app. So the app is called Time Left, and you're asked to take a short personality test. I struggled with a bit with the personality test because some of the questions weren't really written that great. Like, one question asked, are you a smart person or a funny person? You had to choose only one, but bitch, I'm smart and funny. So I agonized over that question for a good 5 minutes until I ultimately chose funny. My rationalization was that you can be smart, but not funny. But anyone who is funny is actually smart too. I do tend to overcomplicate things, but I think I got this one right. There was another question that said, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you enjoy discussing politics? Okay, that was a hard question for me to answer as well, because if I'm surrounded by people who can disagree with me but still show respect for my position, I can talk about politics all day long. But if I have some asshole being rude and disrespectful, I'll sit out that conversation. I don't think there will be a problem. Truly, this sounds fun, and I feel like I'm really going to enjoy myself. Whew, that is it for today's episode, y'all. Be sure to follow me on social media at Lindsay_Sobel and also follow at The Rich Room Podcast. Get out of here.